it's hard for me not to just fanboy over Bobbin because I love who he is and what he does. But this is the guy who can write Reform Dogmatics and then a bunch of essays on all sorts of stuff, ethical issues and such, as well as being like involved in like papers, like newspapers and stuff like that, and being Kuiper's theological henchman. And like he could do all this stuff, but then he was also jumping in on this. And instead of saying this kernel stuff is not religious, this finding the kernel, the essence of Christianity, no, what you need is the dogmatics. Read my whole thing. He's like, I'll do that too. I'll jump in on that project as well as making my own dogmatics, as well as doing this, as well as teaching at every level. That's what I love. I want more people like that, you know, who aren't just fighting over, no, don't make it too simple or don't make it too heady. Like, let's do it all. Every level, let's hit them all. Hey, welcome back to another episode of Parker's Pensies. I'm your host, Parker Setacase, and this is a podcast where we explore all the deepest ideas in philosophy, theology, nature, and life. I love thinking about cool stuff, so come think with me. Today's episode is another very special one. We're going to be talking a little bit more about theology today, and especially the theology of dogmatician Herman Bavinck, however you say it. And I have with me Greg Parker, and Greg's assistant professor of theology at Karen University, I believe, and will be defending his dissertation here soon. I'm really excited for this. It's been a long time coming, but I finally got him on. I'm stoked to get back into some Bavinck and Dutch theology type stuff. This is Theophilus, if for those who are watching. Theophilus is the most excellent puppy, but today, this morning, he was not so excellent. He got into my wife's unmentionables, I'll say, and I may have had to take him to the vet at like 7:30 in the morning. So he's not doing too hot right now. Usually you see him, you know, biting and stuff, but if he is making noises and stuff, that's what's up. Poor little Theophilus is still on the mend. But you can get some Parker's Pensies gear now, like a lot of gear, over at my Teespring store. You can find the link in the description. And we got some designs with most excellent Theophilus coming through. So stay tuned for those. If you love this podcast, if you like this podcast, please consider becoming a Patreon patron. You can support this podcast for anything as little as $3 a month, all the way up to $100. And another way to support the podcast, if you're watching on YouTube, there should be a super thanks button down here. You can give me a tip. You can buy me a coffee, whatever you want to do above and beyond. So thanks for supporting this podcast. Leave us some comments. Give it a like. You know how to manipulate the algorithms. But if you do leave comments, I will still read through those until we get too huge and you guys get too crazy. So without further ado, let's bring in Greg and let's talk about the theology of Herman Bavinck. Greg, man, I always say Bavinck. I think I'm settled on it. I know it's probably like Bavinck or something. What do you say? How do you pronounce it?
I say it the way that you say it, Herman. Nice. Bavinck. I wouldn't sweat it too much. We can start our own little coalition and make that the right reading if we want. But thanks so much for having me on, Parker. It's going to take me a bit to get used to calling you Parker. When I was growing up, I was always called by my last name. Mm-hmm. And so it almost feels like I'm talking to some sort of version of myself right now.
I love that, dude. I can resonate with that. People would always be like, hey, Parker, what's your first name? And be like, yeah, no, that is my first name. And people are like, you have two last names. I'm like, yeah, sorry, man, I didn't name myself.
There was one family that would always call me Parker, my older sister, Parker. And then my younger brother, Parker. There's all kinds of different ways to approach this being a Parker.
That's right. Do you know, I was going to say, do you know what it means? Do you know what Parker means?
I don't. I assume that it had some sort of reference to like keeping a land or something in English nobility or something like that. But
that's what I've heard, is that it's someone who like manages and keeps the parks. Okay. I was like, that's not bad, dude. I like that. I like animals and stuff. I could go with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I can get down with that.
Yeah. Well, dude, so you're part of the Bavinck, it's the Reformation. I've called it like revolution before, and the other guys are like, no, dude, we don't go in for revolutions, we go in for reformations. So can you tell us a little bit, like, how'd you get into studying Bavinck, and where are you studying him, I guess?
Yeah, sure. So I started reading Bobink in about, I guess, 2014. I had just finished up my undergraduate work and was working at an Amazon warehouse. And there was this little reformed bookstore like two blocks from my house. Super dangerous. Mm-hmm. And so every
was
time
this
I
like
would
Michigan
get
a, or something? Where was
so this was in like central PA, Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
PA. And so where the Banner of Truth is located. Nice. Or at least their English location. And so every time I'd get paid, I'd kind of stumble down the street into this bookstore and buy something. And across a few paychecks, I ended up picking up Bobink's Reformed Dogmatics, really as a way to try to bolster my theological, I guess, acumen. Because alongside of being at Amazon, I was kind of helping in this church plant. And I really felt like I needed more theology. So that was when I first started reading Bobink. But it wasn't really until seminary. I went up to Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary, their South Hamilton campus, which is being closed, and really kind of forced or strong-armed a couple of professors there to let me do some independent studies kind of oriented towards Bobink. And so that was when I really, I guess, joined the fledgling Reformation, and then which was already really started because Corey Brock and Grace Utanto and James, Bruce Pass, Cam, and all those guys were already in Edinburgh doing phenomenal work. So got into Bobink then really, I guess, seriously in seminary. I did a THM on his Doctrine of Divine Simplicity. And then in the midst of that, Gray really encouraged me to consider doctoral work. And so I thought about doing that and kind of looking at pastoral ministry and this kind of pastor theologian model, and kind of really fell in love with the idea of doing a PhD. A very dangerous thing.
That's
for
right.
A seminary student. But then, yeah, it all kind of just came together, and I was able to get a scholarship to go to Edinburgh and started working with James, and got connected to the, I guess, as Tim Keller calls us, the Bobink Mafia.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. That's a good one.
So I'm working with James Eglinton at Edinburgh. The project that I ended up kind of settling on was the relationship between Bobink's dogmatics and his ethics.
Yeah.
So kind of, I guess, a timely project given all the English translations that have come out in the last decade.
I remember talking with you about this a couple years back when we were on the underground online seminary, where when Paul Maxwell was still Paul Maxwell and not this shadowy character. I love you, Paul. Yeah. But back in those days, that was when they started coming out with the Bobink ethics. I remember asking you, like, bro, is this good? Like, and you were like tearing your hair out. Like, they probably shouldn't have done this. Like,
yeah.
It's not like his it's not like the dogmatics where he like spent years and years working on it. It's like something, wasn't it like a project he gave up on or he didn't quite complete?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. In Compen, the Theological School of Compen, back in the 20th century or turn of the 20th century, or before, just right before then, you would teach dogmatics kind of alongside ethics. And so he was kind of always working on these manuscripts at the same time to some degree. But his dogmatics, he really polished and worked toward publication. But his ethics, once he switched over to the Free University, he kind of just stopped working on, and you can kind of tell that they're an earlier version of Bobink, not as mature thinking. It's a lot more kind of like scrib notes almost. And so that's really my difficulty with the Reformed ethics, not to slam it. I've read what's available, and it's just unpolished and unfinished. So we just need to kind of treat it as that. I get weary when people talk about his Reformed ethics as if it's like the definitive statement in Reformed ethics. You know, there's, you know, we don't need to look back or look forward at all anymore, right? We have it now.
Yeah.
And he wasn't happy with it in that sort of way. So neither should we.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of work to do yet in Reformed ethics, and especially looking into Bobbink's ethics. But it is a really interesting piece of scholarship because it does give us insight into development within Bobbink's thinking. Hmm. And it is a huge just kind of access treasure trove of like what did he think on these things. Yeah. But I'm not in love with the English edition of it.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's so good. I love that. I don't know how intentional this is, but all the Bobbink mafia, I won't say Bobbink bros because that's not right. And ladies are more than welcome to work with Eglinton. Mm-hmm. But I shouldn't have said that probably. I love that you guys are picking different topics and like just running through his thoughts. Is that intentional? Does James have this master plan, James Eglinton, for those who don't know, to say like, well, I'm going to send Greg out on ethics because it seems like it's falling out that way.
Mm-hmm. So if he has a master plan, you know, if he's Magneto or something standing behind the scenes organizing things, he certainly hasn't let us in on it.
Okay.
So I think it's just kind of the natural development of scholarship that you have all these guys who are interested in Bobbink and girls outside of Edinburgh who just kind of are seeing, you know, holes or seeing opportunities to do interesting scholarship. And so there is some overlap. You know, there's a lot of thinking about this organic motif idea and, you know, maybe too much. I'm not sure. And there is like there's some overlap between my project and Israel Guerrero's because we both have some stuff on faith. And so there is some overlap, which is going to happen just because that's naturally scholarship needs to be in conversation with one another. I think it's just the natural development of a field. You know, we haven't gotten to the point where like Bart studies is where, you know, people are picking one word to look at. So it's still pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And I would say Bart is – no, I won't say anything because I have Bart listeners, but I don't like Bart. maybe we should just say who Herman Bobbink is for the listeners. The podcast has taken like a sharp philosophy of religion type turn, mostly because I picked up that degree after TED's. And so some of my listeners won't even know like who we're talking about at all. Who is Herman Bobbink and like – why, especially if they're philosophy religion folks, they're like, why should we care what this guy thought?
Yeah. So Herman was a Dutch Reformed theologian. He really was the progenitor of an enclave within Reformed theology called Neo-Calvinism alongside of Abraham Kuyper. He lived from 1854 to 1921, so really spanned a good portion of the long 19th century. He's a pretty interesting thinker in that he's as James has put it, he's a polymath, or you might want to differently put it, he's a centrifugal or a centripetal scholar, and that he's really interested in kind of seeing all these different fields of knowledge and desiring to connect them in a theological way. And which is kind of part of, I guess, my dissertation. I looked at something called the Theological Encyclopedia in Herman Bobbink, which sounds like dreadfully boring, but it was actually really exciting and interesting to me. But part of the Theological Encyclopedia is kind of this, or I guess encyclopedia in general as a science of the 19th century, is kind of a looking at all the different fields and trying to map them and talk about how they connect with each other. So this kind of gets into some of his organicism, right? Mm. Seeing that all fields of knowledge are connected.
Didn't Kuyper have one too? Did Kuyper have an encyclopedia?
Yep. Yeah. So he had an encyclopedia, and the English edition is only one volume, but it is a three volume set, the Dutch version. And Bobbink and Kuyper kind of have different approaches to the encyclopedia.
Okay.
At one point I had a conference paper that got canceled because of COVID. Titled one Neo-Calvinist Encyclopedia to Rule Them All, kind of playing on Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that's good.
But so Bobbink was this figure who kind of came to prominence in Dutch society in the midst of a really interesting transition where Dutch society was pretty, you might say, like almost like a class system in some way. But Dutch politics really changed over and you had this ability to really integrate into society for these particularly Dutch Christians or Dutch seceder Christians. And so Bob Enck really took advantage of that and became this kind of world-renowned theologian. He's probably most interesting to people within the Reformed world. And then particularly Americans have some sort of proclivity towards him, but there is a booming scholarship on him in Korea as well.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Yeah, dang, that's huge. Well, I don't want to forget. There's so many things I want to talk to you about, but I don't want to forget to hawk your book here, one of your new books. I didn't actually know there was two. That's awesome. But you, so part of the Bob Enck mafia is new translations of his books, and some it's not even new. It's just the first English translation. Like so, Christian Worldview was a huge one. Like this is one of my favorite books. I love this book, mm-hmm. and my friend Jordan Singer works at Crossway. And he did the cover for it too, so it's like really special. Special to me. He did my logo. So anyone seeing the Parker Spenceys, same guy That's who did great. That, did this. And then you came out with recently Herman Bavinck's What is Christianity? Mm-hmm. And this is huge, man. This is so, like, you know, theological Dutch. That's wild. Do you ever think you'd be able to say that growing up? Like, yeah, I'm an expert in theological Dutch.
I don't think it crossed my mind was that when I was growing up. I was one of the So in Pennsylvania, which is where I'm from and reside now, there's a strong contingent of what you would call Pennsylvania Dutch, which are is really just German right? immigrants who kind of settled in the area.
It's my wife's family. They're all Pennsylvania
Oh,
Dutch.
Nice.
They speak her grandpa like spoke Pennsylvania Dutch. It was wild.
That's awesome. Yeah. So that's same with kind of my family. Hmm. And so growing up, you know, a lot of people take like Spanish or something as a second language. But in my area, German was an offering. And so I took German, which has some sort of a, you know, historical and linguistic connection with Dutch. So I guess I had more envisioned doing something maybe with German rather than Dutch. Yeah. But these are the cards.
It's so good. I did two masters in theology at TEDS, working on another in philosophy of religion at PBA. And people say, like, why don't you just go on and do a PhD in theology? And I don't think they know that, like, look, I'm not in a PhD program yet for philosophy. I'm sure it's going to be really hard to get into and stuff. But once you get in, I have to do, like, logic. And that's cool. But I don't have to do French or, you know, theological French or German or Dutch and then take language tests on Hebrew and Greek. So, like, it's a little bit less, you know, it's that's why I'm trying to go philosophy. Theology is really hard.
It's rigorous in its own way.
Yeah. I don't know how the like European systems are. Did you have to do did you have to have a Hebrew and Greek requirement coming in?
So for the UK system, you don't have competency exams. But in terms of getting into the program, they do want you to show some sort of competency. So I took theological German at Gordon-Conwell as a kind of a way to demonstrate a language. And then James runs a Dutch translation, learning Dutch grammar course your first couple years in Edinburgh. And so I took that alongside of James, and that was kind of like you have to agree to do that in order to get into the program.
Part of the mafia.
They won't really let you. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever get to speak Dutch with anyone?
So it's one of the strange things about, I think, maybe just learning theological languages in general.
Yeah.
Is that because I learned Greek and then Hebrew, which neither of them to me were spoken languages, right? You're just kind of learning how to translate, learning how to parse things. When I learned Dutch, I didn't really learn to speak it. So I tried when I was in the Netherlands. I did like a month-long fellowship and went over there a couple times to visit the Herman Bavinck archives at the Vrije Universiteit of Amsterdam. And I tried to, you know, converse with people. But one of the strange difficulties is that the Dutch language went through significant changes in the 1940s, really sort of to anglicize following the devastation of World War I and World War II. And kind of, you know, de-Germanify, if I can say that.
The language. About that.
And so the Dutch I was trying to speak, you know, were all these words I had learned trying to read Bavinck and translating Bavinck, and they were like, you know, the King's James version or Shakespeare. And so yeah, I got a lot of comments like, you sound like my dead grandparents, like just stop, you know.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Can I just speak English to you? So in the end, I didn't really learn how to speak it. It is one of my goals. I'd love to get into some sort of like Dutch immersion class or something here, just to really pick it up on that sort of level.
Yeah. Well, to go back to this book real quick, just so people know, like, it's a great book. It's Herman Bavinck's What is Christianity? In the cover here, it's a Hendrickson book. It's got the, like, Batman, the animated series font from when we were kids. Are you familiar with that show?
Yeah.
It's so, like, just hit me. Like, this is the Batman animated series. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
I think it's technically the Art Nouveau style.
Okay.
I could have said that wrong, but it was a prominent kind of font style that was used in Dutch society at the turn of the 20th century. So that was it was a little bit of a homage to the time period, trying to draw upon the fonts, but it definitely does have connections to Batman.
That's awesome. I should have known that there's some reason for it. You guys always have reasons, like the Philosophy of Revelation book has, you know, this, I don't know if it's abstract art, but it's like the Dutch art of the time where they're trying to get at like the universals and stuff. And it's just beautiful. I think it's beautiful. Some people think it's just shapes, but there's always a reason.
That was Mondrian. And Mondrian has like a kind of a weird connection to Dutch Neo-Calvinism, and that his earlier stuff has a ton of organicism in it. You know, he's drawing a lot of trees and that sort of stuff. And his later stuff gets in this abstract direction. But he had a connection, I don't want to misspeak. I think his father was a neo-Calvinist minister.
Okay.
But that could be totally wrong.
Yeah.
So I was trying to be pretty intentional with the cover, drawing upon that font. And then a lot of Bavinck's books, the Dutch editions of them, do have some sort of floral on them. So that too was trying to connect to.
Yeah. Is it looks like a tulip, but is it a tulip?
It could be.
Okay.
Yeah.